Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Aleph, and we got ahead yesterday. And how far ahead did we get? Well, we were in the middle of the discussion of how do we know the din of the psul of Arelut when it comes to Truma. We ended up with two very different approaches. So one of the approaches that we had was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said we learn it out from Ish Ish, which is mentioned in general. Over there, it's talking about the din in Emor, about Ish Ish, Mizera Aaron, Vot Sarua Ozav, Bakodashim Lo Yochal, Avashir Yitar. That's talking about Tuma. But since it uses the extra Ish, we don't know what that was coming for. It comes along Rabbi Akiva and he says, Ish Ish is coming to be Marba an Oral, which is why it stresses Ish Ish, says the Gemara, because it's talking about something which is gender sensitive. Therefore, we know it's talking about Arelut and not talking about the din of Aninut. So that's the way that Rabbi Akiva justified saying Oral is Osir, but Einain is Mutter, despite the fact that an Einain is Osir in Meiser Sheni, and you think for sure would be Osir in Truma. That's not the case. The Pasuk specifically came to tell us otherwise. Problem is that leaves us with something that's very unclear, because we had this whole complicated Gzeirah Shavah, which we learned out from Tosha V'Sachir, from the Din of Pesach, the Tosha V'Sachir, that it says by Truma. And that gave us the Gzeirah Shavah, out of which we learned the Din, that the same way that an Oral is possible for Karban Pesach, an Oral is also possible for the Dinim of Truma. I really think that Alon and Trevor have to stop this fighting. It's taking a terrible toll. You know, it's one thing to come in there with a black eye, you know, when your son-in-law is one of these big martial arts guy, you know. I mean, but to have to cover the whole eye, I mean, that's really bizyonis. So I will arrange a sulcha if necessary. Anyway, so we want to know today what exactly would Rabbi Akiva use that whole cup. Remember, we proved that it doesn't even make any sense. The words Toshav V'Sachir, we said that the whole idea of Toshav V'Sachir in terms of a Korban Pesach is completely extra, because how would there be the din of Toshav V'Sachir not actually needing to make a Korban Pesach if it's a reference to an Eved Ivri? So Tosfos says in reality it's a reference to a Goy, but we don't need a Pesach for that. And we had other approaches. But the point is, we've got that extra Pesach of Toshav V'Sachir. What in the world does Rabbi Akiva do with that Toshav V'Sachir? So this is where we're up to today. For Rabbi Akiva. So we're like right in the middle of the daf. For Rabbi Akiva. If I'm making a mistake and we didn't get this far, please correct me. I remember saying it over. So, is it good? Or am I, yeah? Okay, great. So ask the Gemara for Rabbi Akiva. What does Rabbi Akiva do with Toshav and Sachir, since he learned out the din of Arelut being possible for Achilas Truma? He learned it out not from the Korban Pesach, but from the extra words Ish Ish, which we find by the dinim of Tuma. So what does Toshav and Sachir even mean, according to him? So my Ovidle, Omer of Shmaya, that is coming to tell me that in the event that you have, let's say, an Arab who is Mahul, or a Givoni, who is Mahul. Now, the problem is that the dinim of, okay, I mean, they may even be Chayav in Mila, right? Because remember, as the Rambam Paskins, there were the other children of Avram were still Chayav in Mila. So now the question is, if they are already Mahul, so then maybe, in fact, they're not included in the Isser of the Achila of the Korban Pesach. Kol Orel, they're not Arelim. Therefore, we need this extra Pasuk. So we have the Ish Ish on the one hand, that's by Truma. And then we have this additional Halacha to tell me that even where there is a real Mila among the Goyim, that Mila will not allow feeding a Korban Pesach to such a person. Wait a minute, says the Gemara, just because you're getting confused over here. You are confusing not having a foreskin with being mahul. Now, those are two completely different things. Mila is something that is positive. It does not just mean there's no foreskin. A goy who is mahul is considered to be an arel. And a Jew who is an arel is considered to be mahul. And therefore, this should have nothing to do with the achila of the Korban Pesach. I mean, doesn't it say in the Mishnah that hani mulininu, you're calling a goy with a mila, you're calling him mahul? Didn't say beferish in the bright in the Mishnah that if somebody says konam shani nene la arelim, I swear off any benefit from arelim, such a person is allowed to get benefit from Jews who are arelim, but he's usher in goyim who are not arelim. So the status of non arel is not the same thing as being mu. On the other hand, if he says I am usher to have any derivation, any kind of benefit from people who are mulim, he's allowed to have benefit from goyim because they're never mulim, even if they are actually circumcised. But that doesn't mean that they're nimolim. But he's usher bar alei Yisrael. He's nonetheless, he's not allowed because he said mulim. And Yisrael, who are uncircumcised, are still called mulim. So you see that the issue of nimol is not the same as the issue of not having a foreskin. Now, I know what you're going to think, that this is a ridiculous proof, which, as Tosis points out, is the first thing that comes to mind. Because when it comes to nedarim, what it is that matters is what the person is thinking about, and therefore common usage is the main point, right? So when people talk about, when a Jew says arelim, it's like, you know, like David HaMelech was talking about aplishti ha'arel hazeh, you know, so that you're basically being mavaza the goyim with the arelut, but it's not, so, okay, yeah, that's basically your own way of looking at it. What does that have to do with when the Torah gives us halacha of arel and so on? I mean, in the same way that a Jew who is a physical arel is not allowed to eat from a Korban Pesach, even though he's called a nimol, so the opposite is also in need of a pasuk. If you're going to tell me that a goy is actually without a foreskin, so then we need a pasuk to tell me that a goy without a foreskin is not. I mean, why can I bring a raya from the way people look at it? So Tosis explains that the Mishnah over there ends up bringing a pasuk, which is kol hagoyim arelim. And that is the definition, not because it's the common usage. The only time that we use the common usage, says Tosis, is where it's a local absolute, that this is the way that the language works. But if locally, it would still be used in different ways, and therefore the words themselves are not, they're still ambivalent, then we look to the pasuk to define the nature of the language, and that Mishnah refers to the universal in that pasuk in the language, and therefore we can bring a good raya from it. Okay, anyway, so therefore, it's not a good answer. We cannot say that Rabbi Akiva requires a special pasuk of Toshav V'Sochir to teach me a din of goyim who are mulim, because there's no such thing as goyim or a mulim, even if they lack a foreskin. Okay, so what does he do with Toshav V'Sochir? Ela, latuye ger shemal velo tava. We're talking about over here an interesting case. A goy wants to become a ger. So he goes and he gets a brit milah. Now, in order to conclude the brit milah, he's going to have to also, if he wants the gerut, he's going to have to go to the mikveh. He has not had an opportunity to go to the mikveh yet. But you cannot call the act of removing his foreskin to be not a milah, because the moment he goes into the mikveh, he's going to be a ger based on that mila, right? So that means that that mila was an acceptance of brit, and you can't look at it as kol agoyim arelim. You could say, technically speaking, the guy is still a goy if you hold that ger shemol velo taval is not yet a Yisrael. But by no means can you possibly turn the act of mila for the purpose of accepting the bris into a non-mila. And therefore, for that, I need a special pasuk. That's brilliant. Okay. And there's another possibility. Suppose you have a child who was born without a foreskin. So in that case, since Rabbi Akiva holds that a katan who is born without a foreskin still requires a knisa into brit, how is that done? Tzarech latif mimenu dam brit. All you need to do is you get a little drop of blood out of his penis, and that's enough. So Rabbi Akiva holds, if you don't have a din of hatafas dam bris, so then you're still not looking at someone who is allowed to eat, in this case, or allows his father or his master, if he's an Eved, to eat from the Karban Pesach. So that's a Chiddush, because you would say, look, Lamaitza, he doesn't have a foreskin. So the Chiddush is, even though he might be Jewish, or even though he doesn't have a foreskin as an Eved, but he's owned by a Jew, and so Mameli has a din of Yisrael to that extent, that nonetheless, without Hatafat Damrit, that it's still not going to be mutter for his owner or for his father to be able to eat the Korban Pesach, right? Okay. Now, that leads us into a problem. Because we were learning that Toshav and Sakhir, we said, well, Toshav and Sakhir is completely ridiculous. It's extra. We don't need it for anything. And therefore, it's Mufna, remember? And since it's Mufna, we can learn out Truma, Toshav and Sakhir of Truma out of Pesach and be Mechadesh, the din of Arelut by Truma. But now it's not extra, because Rabbi Akiva is making a very good point. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer, who says, oh, what do you do with Toshav HaSachir? You have nothing to do with that. And therefore, it's teaching me about the din of Truma. Because if we didn't have an extra, remember, we would have said, you can't learn out Truma from a Korban Pesach, where there's a din of Pigol, and Nicer, and more Chomer Tuma, and so on and so forth, right? So we needed to have it extra. Okay, but now we don't have it extra. Because Rabbi Akiva is pointing out, this is absolutely necessary. Very important, limud. What do you do about a katan who was already born circumcised and so on? So that means we no longer have our gzeira shava. Oh my God, what do we do now? Ah, this is going to be very simple. It works out perfectly. You see, Rabbi Eliezer, who was the one who taught us that we learn it out of the gzeira shava, he holds that actually a ger who was mul and didn't yet toval, remember we had the shita before, that's how he holds, that he is considered to be a complete ger. Whenever he has an opportunity, fine, so let him go and be toval. But the bottom line is, it's no different, according to him, than a ger who has not yet brought a korban. Well, gerim haven't brought a korban for a good long centuries, right? All the way back to the time when there was no Beis HaMikdash. So since then, so what, is there a problem with their Geirut? No, there's no problem with the Geirut. But whenever the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, so then they'll bring their carbon. The same thing is true over here. You already did the Mila. According to him, if it was a Mila, L'Shem Geirut, that's all that you need to complete the Knesa L'Brit. So obviously, I don't need a Potsik to tell me that you can't eat the carbon Pesach, because you can. That's the whole point, according to him. Furthermore, Rebbe Eliezer happens to hold that a Katan who is born without a foreskin does not require hatafat tambrit. So therefore, what am I going to say? If you have a child that is born without a foreskin, you can't eat the korban, but you can eat the korban pesach, because basically he's the same din as a nimo. So it works out perfectly well. Okay. So therefore, since he holds katan shenolad mahul, ein tzarich latif mimenu tambrit, there's no problem. So what remains to explain is, what then would Rebbe Eliezer do with the Ish Ish? Because Rebbe Eliezer's got this whole complicated way of learning out from the Gzeira Shava. He learns out the din of Arelut or Iser Truma. But actually, Rabbi Akiva had a very good idea. Why do you need to go in such a complicated way to learn out Truma's Arelut from Pesach's Arelut, when all you need to do is look at the dinim of Tuma in Emor, and over there you come up with an additional ish-ish. So obviously, if it's talking about something that is male-oriented, it's talking about something that doesn't apply to females, and therefore must be referring to the need for Mila, and it's telling me that without Mila, you can't eat Truma. Works out perfectly. So what does he do with that pasuk? Why couldn't he use it for that? And what exactly does it mean? Well, remember, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that Dibrat Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam, and that oftentimes we will find words that in Lashon HaKodesh are the way in which we would say something. How do we say any man? How would you say any man? Ish, ish. Okay, so then it doesn't mean that the ish is coming to be marba, some other masculine issue, and therefore, according to him, we don't have a basis to ask, well, what do you do with the ish, ish? Okay. Now, the question is like this. Fascinating question. Brilliant question. We've made a distinction between being nimol and not having a foreskin. We see that those are, excuse me, we see that those are two completely different issues. So now I have an interesting question for you, which is, suppose you have a child who is not yet 8 days old. So, what happens now? Is he considered to be an orel? And if he is, so then there's going to be a problem in your eating the Korban Pesach, if it's not yet time to be mal your child. Is he allowed to eat truma? In what way would he eat truma if he's not 8 days old? I mean, he's pretty well developed if he's already eating truma, isn't he? No, there's a simple way that a newborn infant eats truma. You rub him down with baby oil, that's truma, right? So remember, oil, that's considered to be one of the uses for truma. And of course, olive oil was the way that we put baby skin to rest. Didn't use any of that. Ugh, mineral oil, my God. I mean, can you imagine? You put gasoline on your baby. So we used oil, good oil, olive oil. Okay, can mommy use olive oil on her little infant if he still has not had a brit milah? So it says an oral is not allowed to eat truma. And we said that rub downs are considered to be eating. We learned that out from the pusik. But it's bar bikirbeno. It comes inside of you like mayim. Okay, so then it's like drinking. So what's the din over there? If you have a katana arel, can you rub him down with shemen shel truma? So, I mean, the question is like this. When we say arelut, I mean, does it mean arelut when it's defined? Because here's the issue. If we're talking about kol arel, is it an arel who, meaning anybody who has a foreskin? Is that the point? A physical foreskin? Or, in the same way that we understand the nature of Mila to be expressed not through the physical presence of a foreskin, it's irrelevant. If you have somebody who is a goy and we remove this foreskin, he's still going to be considered as if he does have a foreskin, right? He's still called an orel. So maybe the opposite is also true. The concept of a foreskin is not a piece of skin around a penis. No. A foreskin is something that is meant to be removed from a penis. That is a foreskin. Now, if the child is not 8 days old, then that would mean, go away, bird. That would mean, I'm telling you, they still keep after me. It's Alfred Hitchcock all the time. Since these minor birds have arrived, away, I say, out, out. Eh. Then they come in and sit down on my svarim. Anyway. So the question over here is, do we need to give a definition of a foreskin in terms of the mitzvah? A foreskin means a child with a penis that needs to have a piece of skin removed. But other than that, that's not a foreskin. So that's my question. Is arelut shelo bizmana ma'akva or lo ma'akva? If it's not time for that removal, is that considered to be a true arelut or not? Says Rabbi Zera, I'll prove it to you. I have a brilliant proof. Listen to this one. Tashma. Now, this is all based on a fascinating difference between the din of making sure that your avodim are nimolim or making sure that your children are nimolim. What is the difference? Listen to this. V'cho eved ish miknat kesef. Umalta oto az yochalbo. So what does that mean? If you own an eved, you must do mila to the eved, and then you can go ahead and eat your Korban Pesach. What is it referring to? Eating the Korban Pesach. And when it comes to your child, what does it say? Does it say eating? No. It says, Yimol kol zachar V'az yikrav la'asoto. Oh, now that's back in the afternoon. That's talking about doing the shechita, bringing the Korban Pesach. So now there appears to be a difference between the problem of arelut, which affects your ability to do the shechita ha-Pesach when it comes to your child, or the problem of arelut, which affects the question of eating the Pesach the following night when it comes to the issue of your avonim. How do I know that one is still true about the other? Therefore, comes along the Braita to say, so I would say, okay, we got a problem of circumcision at the time of Shechita. That's your children. And then we have a problem of circumcision, Bishat Achila. That's your Avadim. How do we know that we have a right to say, if you have an Eved that is not Nemo, you cannot bring a Korban Pesach? It doesn't say that anywhere. It says you cannot eat. And how do we know that if you have a child at the time of Achila that requires Mila, that you cannot eat? It doesn't say that. It says you can't do it. So how do I know that? Talmud Lomar, Az. In both of these cases, it uses the word, and then, Az yikrav lo soto, or Az yochalbo. Oh, that's interesting, because that's a wizard that brings you Gzeira Shava. Yes, indeed. So, because of Az, we now have a limud of one to the other. So, if you're missing either, then you can't do either. Huh. So, that is my proof. I'll tell you what my proof is. Because, look, I understand it's very simple to have a situation where you are going to be unable to eat your Korban Pesach because you have a slave that you did not do a milah to, right? Because, okay, it could very well be that at the time that you brought the Korban Pesach, you didn't own this slave. After you brought your Korban Pesach, you then went ahead and you bought a slave. Now you're coming into the Seder and you want to eat the Korban Pesach. We tell you, wait a second, you can't go eat your Korban Pesach now. You've got a slave that you need to be mal first. That's a very simple situation. Yes. So I have that kind of situation where you could even have a slave that we want to say that you have them at the time of Achila and you don't have them at the time that you shechted it, where you bought the slave in between. But how do you have a situation like that with a child? Right? I mean, if the child was not nimal at the time that you shechted the Korban Pesach, then it was already puzzle. Because it says beferish that you can't shecht your Korban Pesach, az yikrav la'asoto. So it must be you didn't have that child at the time of the Shechitas HaPesach. Okay, so when did you have that child? Aha, in the afternoon. And now it says, you can't eat your Korban Pesach. But wait a minute, he's not 8 days old. So you see, says Rabbi Zera, that a child who is not 8 days old is still going to be ma'akev you from Achilas Pesach, which proves that arelut before its time is simply a physical state. It has nothing to do with the chiyuv of the mitzvah. And if there is a foreskin there, then too bad. You can't use the baby oil on him. You'll notice even the heksha on the front of the bottle, it always says, you know, not for arelut, you know. Remember, it said that on Richie, you remember that? On the heksha of the grape juice? Or was it the wine in Finland? It says this has a heksha from foreskins. Because they translated Orla with Google Translation into foreskin. So it said in English on the label, you know, it's kosher from foreskins. Anyway, so yeah, when the neighbors got a gander of that, let me tell you, they weren't going to eat any matzah anymore. That's for sure. Okay, so in any event, I proved it then. So Shmamina, Arilut Shalobizmana, Avi Arilut. There you see. If you had that child during the afternoon and he's only a few hours old, too bad on you, you can't eat your Korban Pesach. Oh, my Rava, Rabbi Zera, my dear friend Rabbi Zera, surely you must understand that this is so absurd that the only place where you would possibly find a ruling like this would be the income tax people, maybe in the state of Israel. I mean, they give these kind of rulings, you know, that you're plundered from income tax, and they create a situation which cannot possibly ever happen, and then there's an easy way out, except that it's physically impossible. So here you imagine, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling you to do something that the IRS or whatever Mas Hakhnasa would tell you to do. All you need to do is this, but it's impossible. You can bring your Korban Pesach, however, you can't have a child with a foreskin, so better get rid of the foreskin. But didn't you say I can't get rid of a foreskin until 8 days? Oh, well, what can you do? That would be the typical response, right, of the government office. So that's the way you think the Torah is? I mean, come on, man. It says in the Pasuk, Himo lo kol zach Omerachmona. This is not just a Pasuk. This is your lover who's speaking here, man. This is Omerachmona. This is not the IRS. And then he's going to tell you to do something that you can't do? Don't be silly. Obviously, that's not the pshat. So what is the pshat? I'll tell you, says Rava, what we're talking about over here. The child is already 8 days old from before. And the issue was that he cannot get a milah because he has a fever. So he was sick. So then it wasn't a problem. In the afternoon, even though he still had a foreskin, what are you supposed to do? You can't remove that foreskin from a sick child, can you? So therefore, you went ahead and you brought your Korban Pesach. Then when it came time to eat your Korban Pesach, the fever broke. And at that point, now you have a child who does have a foreskin. So now you're not going to be able to eat your Korban Pesach. So again, that would mean that we're defining foreskins entirely in terms of the mitzvah. And that's it. Not physical foreskins. Who cares about physical foreskins? So that's the point. Wait a minute. It's not the point. If the kid had a fever, then you need to wait 7 full days after that fever before you have a right to do a milah on him. So how can you tell me if the fever broke in the afternoon, so now a foreskin suddenly becomes a milah problem? No, it doesn't. 7 days later. Fine. We gave him the 7 days already, okay? But can't you use your brains? So I say that the fever broke. I mean that it is now 7 days since the fever broke. And that fever broke on the 7th day of Nisan, and now it's the 8th day, it's the 15th of Nisan, and now, boom, the clock ticks, and all of a sudden he's got a foreskin. 7 days later, okay? That's what it's talking about. So the Avinan, like Kol Shiva, we gave him the 7 days. Well, if we gave him the 7 days, then that means that today was the 8th day, so why didn't we give him a Brit Milah in the morning? Because when it comes to the 7 days from a fever, we need 7 full days, 24-hour periods, okay? The fever broke at 5:36 p.m. This is now 5:36 p.m. is the beginning of the 8th day in terms of fevers. But by the time 5:36 p.m. came around, I had already brought my Korban Pesach. So now I want to know, can I eat my Korban Pesach? Or do I still have to give this kid a milah before? You have to give the kid a milah before. Because now at 5:36, there's time to do a Brit Milah. You see? That's the case, says Rava. So that makes perfectly good sense without creating a whole new situation of pretending that foreskins are enough to prevent you from eating the Korban Pesach. Wait a minute. But the problem is that in the Braita we find Luda'a saying that the day of breaking fevers, that's called the Yom Avrato, the day that the child gets well, is the same as if he was born on that day. Well, if he was born on that day, so then the 8th day in the morning, you can do the milah. So then that means the 8th day from the end of the fever, you could do the milah, right? I mean, doesn't that mean to say, my love, basically you're saying the same thing. Just like the day of birth, lo be inam eit la eit, you don't need 24 hours. from the moment of birth. So then the same thing is true. If today was the day that the fever broke, you don't need 24 hours. You just need the eighth day. No, okay, you're reading too much into what he's saying. All Luda was saying is that the same way that the day that you're born, you have to wait till the eighth day, same thing is true. On the day that you get well, it's as if you were born on that day. Don't think you can go ahead and give that child a Brit Milah. He is not well enough for a Brit Milah till 8 days later. But here it means 8 full days. He wasn't addressing how much of the day it meant. So therefore, we're talking about that case. Very simple, says Rava. That would be the case. And now, I understand, without creating your situation. Now, by the way, there are a lot of halakas, halakha lemaisa, in this issue. Because, I mean, the truth is that there are there's a general halakha like this. Some even learn, Chacham ben Siona Bashaul held that it was actually halakha lemaisa misinai, that this is kiyom hivoldo. So, I mean, the psak halacha is that once there is a 38 degree fever, that's considered to be a chama. And if that's the case, you have to wait 7 full days after the fever goes down. Now, this is also true, according to Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, if a child had any type of antibiotic need tipul because there was an infection. So then that means that, remember, you continue antibiotics usually for 7 days afterwards. He says that actually, here, the 7 days begin from the time that you started the antibiotics, not from the time that you end the antibiotics. That's how he posked. Now we're going to see that there are other cases where if there's an illness, that then you can just go ahead and you can do the milah as soon as the illness passed. Okay, so what are those cases? So, Rav Papa Omar, it's very simple. We could be talking about a case where you don't need 7 full days after the event, such as, let's say, the kid has a pain in his eyes, right? So he's got a blocked tear duct. This is brought halacha as being the equivalent of this. Kid has a blocked tear duct. Even then, we will not do a milah. Why? That is simply because if there is any physical stress on the body whatsoever, then we are afraid of doing anything that is extra stress. Because basically, remember, we view circumcision itself as a stress that the Torah said is considered to be like akravas a korban. That's not a simple thing to put an infant through. It's horrifying for a parent. And, okay, so we do that, but we certainly don't have any right to provide stress on an already stressed body. So any stress whatsoever, even something as simple as a blocked tear duct, is not going to allow us to do milah. But the moment that that stress is relieved, so at that moment we can do the milah. So that's the case, says Rav Papa. Suppose the kid had a pain in his eye, you know. So koivele eini liyanuka. And meanwhile, in the afternoon, after the Shritas HaPesach, he got better. So itpach beini beini. Rava says, I got a simple case. Mommy and daddy are in prison during the time of the Hakravas HaKorban. And they sent a shliach to bring the korban for them. And they are going to be allowed out of prison later on in the afternoon, right? So they don't want to miss out on their Achios Karban Pesach. So, okay, so they went ahead. They sent the shliach. The shliach brought a Karban Pesach for them. Now they get out of prison, and now they want to eat their Karban Pesach. Ah, so now they have a situation. What's the situation that they have? Very simple. The situation is that since we just learned out of the pasuk that in fact there is this new halacha that if the child suddenly appears, which is basically the case over here, the child suddenly appeared in the afternoon because now they have the ability to do that milah. So at this point, they're not allowed to eat until they can. Now, just you should know that this is very interesting because the Marsha makes a diuk from here. It says, mommy and daddy. So the implication here is that mommy also won't be able to eat her Karban Pesach even though the chiv of the mila is not on mommy, it's on daddy. So that's the Marsha's diuk. Now, the truth is, the Minchas Chinuch talks about that diuk, and he says that that's not the point. The reason that it brings mommy over here is just because it's trying to say, okay, why wasn't there a bris mila? I mean, normally, if mommy wasn't in jail, she would have arranged for a bris mila. That's all that it means. But the truth is that there is, this is a beautiful piece that Reb Chaim Brisker on the Shas talks about. What is the basis of the halacha of milat zecharav being ma'akev? Is it because of the fact that you had the mitzvah of Mila and weren't mekayim it? Or is it a completely separate halacha, which is the fact of having a child, whether the mitzvah was on you or not? And that would make a nafkamina in terms of mommy or daddy over here. So even though technically speaking, mommy isn't mechuyevet in the mitzvah, it's still possible that the milat zechareha, will be ma'akev her from achilas ha-pesach. Okay, and this is not in our sugya directly, but since this is the place where the diak was made, I thought it was worthwhile bringing up. Rav Kahana, Bereder Rav Nechemia Omar, is very simple. Basically, what happened over here is that this child was a tumtum. So we didn't even know that he had a penis. Forget about the question of whether we could do the mila. So remember, a tumtum is a case where the genitalia are covered by a piece of skin. Now the question is, do I have a chiv to remove that with surgery? I'm supposed to remove that flap of skin in order to be able to do a brit milah? So that's a question, whether there's a chiv. But there's certainly no chiv on a father to become a surgeon. I mean, when I don't know anything about removing flaps of skin, get out of here, right? So that's not the point. So the question over here, therefore, is in practical terms, there was no way for me to give a mila until now, and now he was nikra. The surgery was performed after the bringing of the Korban Pesach, and now he turns out to be a male, and now he needs to get a brit mila, and that's coming to tell me that if that happened between the time of the Akramas HaKorban and the Achilas HaKorban, so daddy has to make sure the baby now gets a brit mila. Okay. Obviously, in practical terms, if this were literally the case, that the child would be weakened by the surgery and still wouldn't be able to get a brit milah. So you need to make the necessary adjustments for either the passage of time or a removal of tumtumutz, which didn't cause any, whatever. Okay, next. Reb Shravia Omer, I have a simple case. It's a very weird case. This is a case of a difficult birth, to say the least. Baby got stuck in between the beginning of the birth and the end of the birth. So there is poor baby with his head sticking out of his mother's cervix or even vagina. This is a machlokas, whether we're talking about a child who is still caught up in the vagina. The head is still in the vagina, but I certainly can't get hold of his genitals to do a bris mila, and or whatever it's talking about, or his head is sticking out. And he was born that way, and he didn't get out till 7 days later, after, it's a weird case, after the Shchitas HaPesach. What, says the Gemara, how's a kid going to survive a birth like that? There's no way, Jose. Umi chaye? Didn't we learn in Masechet Nida that kivan sheyatza la'avir olam, the moment that that child's head comes out into the world, then you have all of this miraculous activity in which the basic interrelationship of the blood of mommy and baby is clamped down on miraculously. Now he's not being getting any kind of nourishment through his mother, and that is all over. Now he's got to eat and so on. And that which was closed becomes open, so now his mouth and digestive system becomes available for providing him nutrition. Umbilicus is closed, and that means that he is not going to be able to live. And if that wouldn't happen in a normal birth, I mean, you wouldn't be able to have any baby born. Imagine if he were unable to now breathe for himself or get nourishment for himself, or imagine that he was still connected to his mother. I mean, this would be disastrous. So that means that this child needs to eat. So how is he going to eat? So he couldn't have lived for 8 days. He can't nurse. How the heck is he going to nurse the vagina? That's really a little bit difficult. So, what we're talking about over here is Kegon de Zante Ishta. What happened is that he had a fever, and therefore that fever kept his metabolism going. Whose fever? He had himself a fever? Then you couldn't give him a Brit Milah even when he gets out. We said if he has a fever, you have to wait another 7 days. No, his mother had a fever, and that kept him going from the additional heat. Or you could say that the idea of not being able to survive without eating all of that time is only where he's not busy crying during that period. If he's yelling, which I assume he's doing if he's still alive in that kind of situation, so then that itself is keeping his metabolism alive, and as long as he's got enough energy that can break down for that, he won't die. Okay, anyway, a little bit of a weird case, but let's consider. Now, another question is, somebody who is an Orel, can he be mekabel a hazoya? That's the question. There's a relationship between a hazaya and arelut. So can he get the mechatat sprinkled on him or not? So, Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Benah, yes, of course he can. An Orel is mekabel hazaa, because we see that the fact is that our forefathers, when they came into Eretz Israel, they must have had the mechatat of the paraduma sprinkled on them while they were still arelim. So they came out of the river Jordan on the 10th of Nisan, and on the 10th, we were unable to do Mila, because, I mean, they're still really worn out from the traveling, and that would mean that it would be dangerous. And so the big day of the Mila, that was done on the 11th. But then, if you had to wait until after Mila to get Hazaya, so then they wouldn't have been ready for the Korban Pesach, because it takes those 4 days. I mean, so when did they get the Hazaya? They must have gotten the Hazaya. Remember, you need at least two times Hazayah, so you would need to have the 3 days in between. Okay, so what did they do? Must have been that the Hazayah was while they were still Arelim, either while they were still in the Midbar, where they had a Paraduma, or after they came into Eretz Yisrael, whatever, but they're still Arelim. Well, maybe they didn't bring a Korban Pesach that year. I don't understand. What's the Raya? How do you... No, please, don't even think about it, baby. Lo Salkadaiter. It says Beferish in a Pasuk. Vayasu et haPesach. This was in Gilgal, Barbasar leChodesh Arishon, Matkif lo Marzutra. So maybe they brought this Korban Pesach when they were Tamei. The halacha is that if most of the people are Tamei Mei, so then they can go ahead and bring a Korban Pesach even Betuma. So what makes you say that they had Hazayav the Paraduma? Maybe they didn't. Omar Le Ravashi, because it says Beferish in the Braita, Malu v'Tavlu. Okay, so forget that. Omar Rabba Bar Yitzchak, Omar Rav. Lo nitna priyat mila la Avram Avinu. Shenemar ba'et ayom ha'ashem ha'yoshua, aselecha chorvot surim, and do what? Mol es b'nei Yisrael, shenit. Go ahead and give them a second Brit Mila. Second Brit Mila? Oh, that's weird. How do you have a second Brit Milah? Must be, therefore I'm saying, that there is a concept of a second Brit Milah. And what would that be? That we're talking about, that in the event, even though, up until now, somebody who did a Brit Milah normally would remove the foreskin, but he would leave behind the membrane that is tightly covering, and it's basically like a hard-boiled egg, has that membrane that you remove from around the egg. It's uptight against the egg, and then when you pull it off, you tear it, you pull it off, right? So that's basically what the Or HaPriah is. So originally, the din was that it was enough to remove the orla. So that, as Rashi says, that's because that membrane gradually wears away with age. Remember, we had the same idea that the same thing is true about a women's besulim. The hymen gradually wears away with age. And that's why when we're talking about betulah, we were talking about somebody who is still a nara betulah. That was the whole question. Can a kohen gadol even marry an old lady of 12 and a half years old? That was the shaila we were talking about, right? So over here, originally, as Rashi says, Avram was a bit advanced in age. And at that time, the mitzvah milah that was given to Avram was to remove the thick skin. And the orla is a nice, thick piece of skin and is easy to remove. Now, taking off the ora priya, now that is very tricky. That's why today they do this awful thing, which really turns me off terribly. So since they don't know how to properly do a milah, because it's too dangerous to get your fingers on the ora priya and to pull it off, so they actually, very painfully, that's why the kids are always crying before the milah. They don't even cry at the milah, but they scream their heads off beforehand. Because what they do is they use a probe to insert between the or ha-pri-a and the top of the penis. Imagine how painful that is. And they're basically tearing that, not tearing, but they're removing the connection of that membrane. And that way, when they do their little trick, in which, again, because they're not confident, so they use this little, not clamp, chas v'shalom, only the, not from people who use a clamp, but they use this little, I forgot what they call it. They use this piece of metal with that slit in it. Huh?
A penis shield.
Fine. So basically, they stick both skins, the ora priya and the ora hamila, they pull it up over the penis, put this clamp underneath, and that way they can't make any mistakes to injure the baby. And they don't have to worry about afterwards when you've got this slippery with blood, you've got a slippery surface to grab onto the ora priya, then. So even beginners in milah are able to do milah this way because there's nothing to it. You can't make a mistake. You just have to make sure you hold the scalpel against the shield. And then everything is fine, right? So that is, But anyway, so the people that are real bekiyim in milah, they don't do that. They don't use these shields and so on. They simply know how to cut. They do first the cutting of the ora priya by lifting the ora priya over the top of the penis, using their hands to know exactly where they're supposed to be cutting, and then they jump to get a quick grasp on the ora priya and remove the ora priya. Fine. So anyway, just by the way, you should just know that Kabbalistically, these two orot are keneged Aza v'Azoel. Remember the whole story of Aza v'Azoel, and the original problem of Aikulem Nashim Mikol Asher Bachorun, the original breakdown in that caused the Mabul and so on, which was the first place the Moshe Rabbeinu appears. So the orla, which is the thick or, is different than that or, and therefore we have two different things. The Avaza, or the way that it's pronounced, the Gemara is Uza Va'Azael. So Uza is keneged the orla, which has to be completely removed. That's what we call the orla that defines the goyim. But Azael, and this is connected to the avoda of a person, there's always a stage in life where a person is capable of breaking through in his own life. He's capable of breaking through the incredible blindness of his own kashyus oref, where he's completely involved in himself and so on. So that's the umaltem et orlat levavchem, and orpechem lo takshu od. Fine, but then even after a person breaks through that horrific adolescent-like stubbornness and artificial independence, which causes him to be insensitive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence and Ratzon, and of course insensitive to his own life and his own internal being, and he just is walking around basically like Uzzah, which is an artificial intelligence in which he doesn't even experience life. He's just like an animal. So even after breaking through that, which takes a lot of work for a human being to mature, even after breaking through that, he's left with the equivalent of an or ha-priyah. The or ha-priyah is timtum alev. It's a loss of sensitivity. It's a loss of clarity. It's like just getting involved in stupid things in which the windmills of your mind are, even if you're aware of yourself, you don't even realize how caught up you are in nonsense. So that is the second darga of mila, halakhically speaking. And that, interestingly, the Rav Tzadok says, but you see, it's much easier to get rid of that. Because once you tear through the Ora Priya, it has a tendency to just fall off. And it, once you've loosened it, so once you make that first breakthrough, so you're no longer A, we won't tell you, but you're no longer one. So now you're already acting like a human being, right? Okay, so that is Keneged, these two dargas. So the first darga wasn't given to, the second darga wasn't given to Avram Avinu. Because since it says, it means that there's another level of Mila. Well, what do you mean, another level of Mila? I mean, we know that it says Beferish in the Pasuk. I mean, the people in the Midbar, they did not have the first stage of Mila. So when Yoshua was told, go and do Mila, that's what it's referring to. Where did he come up with this idea that this is a new Chiev of Mila? Ah, don't believe it. No? So then why does it say Shuv? Why does it say in the Pasuk, do it again? What do you mean again? They never had a Mila in the first place. Where's the again? Yeah, the lav lepriya again means that there's now a chiev to cut off more. Oh, so once that's true, so how do you understand shenit? Shenit means a second time. What's the second time? Ah, that's a new halacha. Because the truth is there's really three possible stages. You can remove an orla. You can remove an or hapriya. But then it turns out that there may be strands left that are going to passel the mila, because even a very tiny strand of skin that is covering over the edge of the corona of the penis is enough to passel the entire mila. Remember, we had this before. And this idea of shenit is to tell me that just like tchilat mila ma'akevet, just like a full foreskin is obviously ma'akev the mila, afsof mila ma'akvinbo, you will not be able to eat a carbon pesach even though there's a half a millimeter of skin that's left, because we learned this in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah in Shabbos, we had elu hein tzitzina ma'akvinat ha'mila. These are tiny shreds of skin that nonetheless consider, make us consider the mila as if it was never done. And that's tremendous chiddush. There's no foreskin. There's no membrane. And what in the world? What are you getting so hung up with a little? That's exactly why this pasuk is coming to address. It's exactly the same. The idea over here is elo ein tzitzina ma'akvinat ha'mila. If you have basara chofeh et rova atara, so you have enough skin that covers over most of the atara. Most of the atara, remember, we paskin here, does not mean most of the corona, which would be a lot of skin. It's talking about most of the little rim around the edge of the corona. And when it's talking about most, it doesn't mean most of the circumference. It means most of the height. My gosh, so you're talking about this tiny little sliver of skin that wasn't even noticeable, but it happens to cover 2 millimeters of the edge of the corona, and now you're going to have to remove that piece of skin. Yep. He's eno ochel betruma, and he's not allowed to eat truma in that situation. And when we say most, what do we mean? Amaravina vitame rabirmiya barab amarav. We mean most of the height. Basar chofet rov gov ha. Shel Atara, why didn't they get Mila in the Midbar? You said none of the people in the Midbar got. That's crazy. Why didn't they? Well, there's two possibilities. One is Mishum Chulsha de Urcha. Basically, you never knew. This is Machlokas over here, how to understand it. That they were weak from having traveled, or, which was much more reasonable as the Ritva explains, they were worried about the need to travel. Because what's going to happen? Well, what do you mean? You've been here for 10 years, you know? I mean, like, what are the chances you're going to pick up and leave tomorrow? Yeah, but remember, you never know. Sometimes the Anane Akova, they sat there, and, you know, just as you're getting comfortable, which is basically what life is all about, right? Just as you're getting comfortable, pow, everything blows up in your face. And now, speaking of Mila, it's Corona time. Exactly. So that's why they were worried about this idea, COVID time. Okay, so now who knows what's going to happen? So if we need to go Remember, COVID is al shem corona, right? That was, so since the idea over here is I need to make sure that the child is not going to be endangered by the mila. If I go and make a bris mila today, wouldn't you know it? The next day, the anani akavet pick up and, oh no, what am I going to do now? So you're going to have to travel, but the child is going to be in bad shape because he's not well because of the mila. So because of that, I couldn't take that chance. That's one approach to why they wouldn't do mila. The other approach is because there never was, during those years that Klal Yisrael, Hashem was angry at them, they never had that sweet, wonderful, delicious wind out of the north that just cools everything down, blows away the clouds, gives you that pure sunshine. That's what you need to make a full recovery. And therefore, since lo nashiv l'ruach tzfonit, titanya kolot anavim shana shay Yisrael b'midbar, lo nashva lehem ruach tzfonit, and therefore, they were not going to give a mila because it's dangerous. You can't really, I mean, the weather's bad. You don't give a mila when the weather's bad, do you? So my time, of course we do, but we'll see why. So why was there no north wind? You could say it's Bishop de Nizufim, are you? It was because Hashem was mad since they did the Maisa Egel, or it was from the Maisa of the Meraglim, whatever. This is a machlokus, actually. The Rashi says it was the Maisa Egel. Tosfos says they were Nezufi because of the Maisa Meraglim. And the other pshat is that since there were the Anani HaKovet, we didn't want the Anani HaKovet to blow away, so we couldn't have a lot of wind. You'd think HaKadosh Baruch Hu could handle that problem, right? No, the Anani HaKovet were Ananim. That's the whole point. And so, because of that, says Rav Papa, Halacha LaMaisa, Hilkach Yuma De'iva V'yuma De'shuta Lo Ma'alinan. They do not do a Brit Milah if it's a cloudy day. And do not do a Brit Milah if you've got a Chamsin and you've got winds out of the south. And as a matter of fact, you shouldn't even get a blood test on that day. Lo misochrinan beik. It's dangerous to even let blood. And so why do we? Nobody looks at the weather nowadays. Yeah, idna de dashu barabim. Well, once people are dumb enough to do things that are stupid, shomer psa'im Hashem, God protects the simple until they're not simple. Like the Surgeon General warns you that smoking causes cancer. Don't go around and tell me you are simple. Maybe you used to be simple, but you ain't simple anymore. So this becomes now a big halacha about the right to smoke and so on and so forth. You do not have such a right. Okay. Anyway, that covers today's daf on level number one. And we'll be doing levels number 2 through 793 this afternoon. Anybody who wishes to join, meanwhile, have a fantastic day. And thank you so much for sharing and being there and allowing me to learn with you, which is my greatest joy. Kol tov, everyone.